From the studios of Wavefront Audiovisual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 105 of Little Brother for the 15th of October, 2022. Stay tuned, Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants and not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. I don't even know why you would do that. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com or leave a comment on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. So, let's get started. I've spoken about flock safety in episodes 79, 80, and indeed last week in episode 104. And now here's another mention. It seems like the town of Lafayette, Colorado, has added itself to the list of towns and other places that are using flock safety to provide automatic license plate readers, or ALPRs. As I mentioned last week, flock safety's cameras are a federated system where each installation shares data with other installations, and the database of what cars have been seen and where can be queried without much respect to where exactly it is that they've been seen. This is concerning because government and non-government organizations alike have deployed these cameras. My personal biggest concern has been their ability to track women seeking reproductive care as they move from state to state to get it. However, this news about Lafayette came to me by way of a right-leaning news source, which says to me that they're concerned about it as well, which is good. These battles should never be viewed as left versus right so much as authority versus the rest of us, and uniting the wings is the best way to gain a foothold on them. Facebook are warning users that there are about 400 different Android and iPhone apps that attempt to steal your Facebook logon credentials. Facebook's parent company, Meta, state that the apps in question are readily available in both the Apple App Store and the Google Play Store, and are designed to look like something fun or useful, essentially a Trojan horse. The apps will ask you to log on to Facebook when you use them, thereby stealing your credentials, much like the microcontroller honeypot Wi-Fi AP that I talked about last week. You may gain some protection by using two-factor authentication with Facebook, but the irony of Facebook being concerned about privacy is tasty. On Monday, there was a partial outage of ServiceNow, an ITIL-oriented service used in IT operations all around the world. The outage lasted a couple of hours and affected multiple customers. I did a quick informal survey of people working for organizations that I know to be using it, and 2 out of 3 reported that they were out of service. I haven't seen any public statement regarding the cause of the outage, but if your IT department was a little slow to respond on Monday, slower than normal for a Monday, I should say, this may have been why. Last week, I mentioned that the European Union is going to require USB-C connectors for all manner of electronic devices as the one port to rule them all, effective in 2024. According to Bloomberg tech reporter Mark Gurman, whose reputation for sniffing these things out is pretty solid, the iPhone 15 will feature the port, beating the European deadline by a year. Accessories using the USB-C port, such as AirPods, should begin to appear even sooner. Yeah. Google Fiber claims to be field testing internet delivery at the blinding fast rate of 20 gigabits per second. While many of us may be hard-pressed to come up with an immediate use for this kind of bandwidth, I don't personally have to think too hard to remember the days when 2 megabits was considered fast. So, even though this technology may not have immediate use to the average user, given some time, I'm pretty sure that usage will grow into it. And it's good to see an internet provider preparing for it. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. Well, here we are again. It's time for another round of Who Got Pwned This Week. We've got 3 this week. First up is Intel. It seems as though the chipmaker lost control of the source code for the UEFI BIOS for the next generation Core processors, known by the working name Alder Lake. While the news of the leak didn't make the cut in last week's podcast, it is this week because Intel is confirming that the code being distributed is genuine. Opinions on the impact that this will have on security are mixed. Second, we have Iranian State Television. The domestic propaganda outlet of the Iranian government was hacked during a newscast. An image of a mask appeared, followed by a picture of Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei, surrounded by flames and captioned with a message calling for uprising. Control of the network was reacquired within a few seconds, and upon return to normal, the anchorman appeared visibly shaken by the incident, no doubt wondering if some of the fallout was going to hit him. The group claiming credit is called Adalat Ali, or Ali's Justice. Finally, we have a multi-pwn for our third entry, but they're grouped together because they're similar targets and come from a similar attacker. Pro-Russian hacktivist group Killnet is claiming credit for taking several U.S. airports offline. The attack was a run-of-the-mill distributed denial-of-service attack, or DDoS. Airports affected were scattered across 23 states. The interruption only affected public-facing portions of the airport's systems, so passenger safety was never impacted, and impact to passenger ticketing and convenience would have been limited to the use of consumer devices that wouldn't be able to connect to the airport system for flight information, etc. I have a couple of bits of news this week in the world of workplace surveillance. The first comes to us from the Netherlands, but finds its roots here in the U.S. with a company called Chetu. I'm assuming I'm pronouncing that right. It's C-H-E-T-U. Chetu is a web development house like many others, and like so many such companies, it utilizes a remote workforce, which may be, and in this case is, scattered around the world. From a technological perspective, this is potentially good stuff. Of course, the big thing about IT work is that it is generally quite capable of speaking for itself. You did work, you produced product, the company profited, and you earned your paycheck. End of story. Sadly, some managers do not see it that way. It seems as though Chetu were monitoring not only the usage patterns of their employees' computers, but also requiring them to work under video surveillance, even as they did so from their own homes for some reason I'll never understand. That is where the Netherlands come in. An employee of Chetu, who has not been named, is based there, hired by Chetu's Rijswijk office, that's in the Netherlands, so this wasn't exactly an international hire, and he didn't agree to these terms. Even as he'd been working for the firm for a year and a half, he was advised one day that he would be participating in a mandatory, what did they call this thing? Corrective action program, and that during the workday, he would not only be required to be logged in, but also to have his webcam active the whole time. His response was, quote, "I don't feel comfortable being monitored for 9 hours a day by a camera. This is an invasion of my privacy and makes me feel really uncomfortable. That's the reason why my camera isn't on. You can already monitor all activities on my laptop, and I am sharing my screen," end quote. He was fired, citing a refusal to work. Except, he wasn't refusing to work. He was working, producing product, and bringing profit to the company. So, he did the American thing and he sued. In his lawsuit, he stated that the firing was disproportionate, and oh, by the way, the request that led to it would have been a violation of European privacy laws. The courts agreed and awarded him 75,000 euro, or about 73,000 US dollars. More places in the world should do that. Maybe someplace closer to home will? Well, this isn't quite as solid, but here it is. A new law in Ontario requiring that workplaces advise employees if they are under surveillance, and how. It doesn't matter if the employee is in the workplace, working from home, doing field work, whatever. Any surveillance by any kind of electronic device needs to be disclosed. This is the first law of this type in Canada, and while it stops short of providing any rights of refusal, it's at least a non-zero where we had a zero before. Now, I kind of tipped my hand to my thoughts about all of this at the start of this piece when I mentioned that your work should speak for itself. If you are producing work, meeting your deadlines, making money for the company, that really should be the end of the story, right? I believe that this level of surveillance comes from management that doesn't know how to manage. The first word in human resources is human, but the only word these people hear so often is resources. I have the odd view that workers, treated like human beings, will produce so much more than if you instead put them under a microscope and micromanage them. I've seen it work that way many times, even in retail. But I'm just a worker. What do I know? All right. This is really, really annoying. Anyone who has listened to this show for long has probably heard me speak glowingly about the Signal Private Messenger from Open Whisper Systems. It's a messaging client that does text, voice, file transfers, and video, all with end-to-end encryption. While data is stored on Open Whisper Systems servers, it pretty much is impenetrable even to the sysadmins, because the data is stored encrypted using keys that are on the end user's devices and nowhere else. Up to now, on the Android platform, though not on any others, I will say, it has also been a top-notch SMS application. SMS, for those not familiar with the term, is short message service, which is the default type of text message found on mobile devices. SMS allows messages of up to 160 characters. Does that number sound familiar? Even though most phones from this century have masked that limitation by splitting longer messages up, and has been present at least since 2G cell phones, so way back in the 90s. I'd say it's obsolete. It probably should be. But it actually gets a fair bit of use, and no kidding, Signal for Android really is a good SMS client. Now, from a privacy perspective, I'm not going to lie to you. SMS is a dumpster fire. I understand why Signal wants to be rid of it on the one platform where it's available. Unfortunately, I cannot support this decision. One of the biggest ways that I've been able to sell other Android users on this app is to tell them, look, all you need to do is install this app and use it to text like normal, and you can use it for everyone you've been texting with. But when you text with someone else who's using this, it's secure and encrypted. That is a really big selling point, especially when trying to get non-technical folks to use it. And soon, it'll be gone. I think this is a gut-wrenchingly wrong decision. OpenWhisper systems have been completely inflexible about this, even as this is clearly an immensely unpopular decision. They have basically shut off the lines of communication because they don't want to hear it. Ironic, isn't it? An organization that produces a top-notch communications app, cutting off communications. But here we are. Discussion threads on their site have ended with what essentially amounts to, "It's not up for discussion, threads closed." Well, they may not want to hear it, but they need to hear it. If you use Signal on Android, and iPhone users, I want you to sit this one out. But if you use Signal on Android, I would like to ask you to do three things. The first thing I would ask you to do is to go into the Google Play Store and give Signal Private Messenger a one-star review. In the text of your review, I want you to explain that you are doing this because they are threatening to remove SMS support, and that the one star will be reversed when the decision is. The second thing I would ask you to do is send an email to support@signal.org. Again, that address is support@signal.org. I want you to implore them not to do this. If you can point to any public conversations that demonstrate what an unpopular decision this is, such as on Reddit or other social media sites, include links to those. Third and finally, if you give to OpenWhisper systems with any regularity, stop. Just turn off the spigot. Again, I fully understand why they made this decision. I fully understand why they want to be rid of SMS. I'm just not interested in those explanations. This is going to substantially reduce the usefulness of the application, and now I, and many others like me, have to explain to all of the people that we have persuaded to use Signal why they suddenly need to use two different messaging apps. Apparently, it's not bad enough that we already had to do this with iPhone users. What's going to happen is that Signal will be abandoned by some of these users in favor of an app that they can use to talk to anyone. That's going to be SMS, by the way. While other users of Signal are threatening to move off to other encrypted apps because they're upset and reacting rather than responding. Both of these outcomes will balkanize the communications ecosphere, leaving SMS as the common communications channel since nobody seems willing to adopt a common standard for secure communications. I doubt anyone from OpenWhisper Systems is listening to this podcast. But if you are, I'm going to ask you one more time, please don't do this. You're making a huge mistake. And despite what you think, privacy is going to suffer for it, not gain. Speaking as a radio geek, can I just say wireless is cool? I love wireless. Wireless communications are just amazing and awesome, until they're not. Now, one of the places where I think reliance on short-range wireless communications has maybe been a bit much is the corporate environment. Yes, it's very cool that you've been able to stand up wireless access points all over the place that get access for your users to the corporate network, and that you therefore didn't have to pull Ethernet cables to every desk in the office. It's very cool that someone can pick up their laptop from off their desk and walk it to a conference room, all while continuing the conversation on whatever video conference tool that your company uses. That's a pretty cool flex. Until it isn't. So, we need to talk a moment about an intrusion tool called a Wi-Fi Pineapple. According to TechTarget.com, quote, A Wi-Fi Pineapple is a wireless auditing platform from Hack5 that allows network security administrators to conduct penetration tests. With penetration tests, ethical hackers seek out security vulnerabilities that a threat actor could exploit in the company's system, network, or infrastructure.
End quote. Of course, they describe it as an auditing platform, because that's one of the great uses to which it, like any intrusion tool, can be put. But what if it gets in the hands of someone who isn't an auditor? What if it gets into the hands of one of the threat actors that particular paragraph from TechTarget.com is talking about? They only cost about $120, and literally just anyone can buy one. Okay, I hear you saying, but we've got a secure perimeter around our building. I'm familiar with these secure perimeters. I've worked in a few places that have them, where you have to either swipe an ID badge or talk to a guard, or maybe you can get a transponder for your car that'll open the gate for you and let you into the parking lot. They're actually really pretty cool. That's generally really good ground security. What about air security? You know what's gotten really cheap lately? Drones. That's what. Now, hopefully you can see where this is going. You hang a Wi-Fi pineapple from a drone as its payload, fly it up onto the roof of a building, and you have a platform from which to carry out attacks against the wireless platform inside that building. Is this too far out? No. Security researcher Naomi Wu presented this idea at various security conferences over the past decade or so. Another security researcher, Sami Kamkar, demonstrated it. But that's all theory, right? Well, maybe it was at the time, but right now? Nope. Yet another security researcher, Greg Laniers, recently told of an event where he actually saw it done to a U.S. financial firm. So, I guess I have three OPSEC tips for you this week, all directed at corporate security. First, check your airspace. Check your roof. Make sure you don't find any unexpected drones landed on your buildings. Second, consider maybe not using Wi-Fi when possible in favor of Ethernet connections to desks and conference rooms. Yes, you're probably going to have to put up with some whining from the users, but this is kind of important to corporate security. Third and finally, if you must use a Wi-Fi network, the approach that one of my former employers used might be instructive. Essentially, the Wi-Fi network was outside of the secure corporate network, and if you wanted in, you had to use the same approach as if you were logging in remotely. You'd use the VPN. In the current age, where this can be made thoroughly transparent, there's really no reason not to. As usual, we will end this week's show with the fail of the week. The winner this week is Toyota. The Japanese automaker recently discovered that code for the automaker's official connectivity app, T-Connect, was uploaded to GitHub while containing access keys that could be used to retrieve customer data from Toyota's cloud-based servers. It's apparently been there for 5 years and has allowed access to customer names, credit card numbers, and phone numbers. Unfortunately, Toyota have no knowledge of whether or not any data was misappropriated during that time. Even if audit logs had been kept, it's very rare to see them go back more than a few months. Keys left in software checked into public-facing software repositories like GitHub are a big enough problem that that GitHub has recently started scanning code in their repositories for such issues. However, false positives, and as appears to be the case with Toyota, false negatives, are easily caused by keys being stored in odd formats or using odd techniques, and will limit the effectiveness of such scans. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fungaboo and the crowd at Helix for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 group. Special thanks to Fungaboo, Azriel, Daryl, DOA, Fungaboo, Julie Bernstein, Misdemeanor, Primal Blue Wolf, and Thriller at Play for story leads. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our Who Got Pumped music is Analog Summer 3 by Asarhad. Our Fail of the Week music is Space Reggae by Zap. Our opening theme music and bumper is Around Chaos by Heatseeker. And our closing theme is Space Debris by Captain Image. If you have questions or comments about this podcast or want to join the conversation, please drop me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com or drop a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next week when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Stay safe and be well. This is Little Brother, the show where... Let's do that again. This is episode 105 of Little Brother for the 14th of October... This is the 15th of October. What the hell am I thinking? Effectively in 2024. Effective, not effectively. Effective in 2024, according to Bloomberg tech reporter Mark Gurman, whose reputation for "and I ran that sentence into the previous one." Take three. Sadly, hired by Chetu's Ricewick office, both of these outcomes will balkanize the communications ecosphere, leaving SMS as the common communication channel. I'm just going to start the whole paragraph over. With pen tests, ethical hackers seek out vulnerable security. According to techtarget.com, quote, a Wi-Fi. Because that's one of the great uses to which it, like any other intrusion tool, where he actually saw it done to a U.S. financial therm.